Well, praise God. Good to be with you. And excited that I can kind of impart some thought on this. And, you know, when we came over this time to New York, this wasn't planned. But yesterday we were having a conversation with Josh and Vaughan and naturally begun to speak about what we were doing in the UK and some of the heartbeat behind it. So before I kind of speak about what we do and how we do, you know, I think wherever there's a what, there's got to be a why. And until you know what the what is irrelevant. What you do is relative to why you're doing it. And often what I see people do is a what without the why. And so let's talk about the why for a little bit. We have now got six congregations. We're one church with six congregations. In 3 weeks, that turns to seven. And hopefully by the end of a year, that turns to eight. I'm conscious that most of you have never been to Family Church. Lils is from Family Church. Nick's been there. Vaughan. Josh has been through. So I've got to try and paint the picture of what we're not. What we're not are 6 to 7 independent churches. What we are is one church with one heart, with one DNA that is present in 6 to 7 different locations. Now, the strength for me happened when I spoke to my events manager as he was taking me to the airport this week. And he said to me that this last Sunday that went by, he had to visit 4 of the locations in 1.5 hours, which was they had different situations where he needed to go in and see what was happening in 4 of the locations or congregations. And so he did that. And he said what was amazing was he started in Portsmouth Central. He did what he needed to do there. He went to Portsmouth North. He went to another congregation called Havant. And then on to Gosport. And he said it was almost bizarre when he walked into 4 different locations and there were 4 different leadership teams making the day happen, yet he felt like he was in the identical church in each place. Now, those things are only maintained where there's common heart. There's got to be common heart. People say to me when I'm talking about what we're doing, oh, you're multi-site. I said, yeah, kind of. Because what I don't want to do is be fashionable with what the current fashionable thing in Christianity is. And you hear a lot of things at the moment like multi-campus, multi-site. I would say that what we're doing would be better defined as multi-congregational. Because to me, the essence is that there's one church and there's different expressions of that church in different neighbourhoods. It's been a journey for us. When I turned up in England and God started to speak to me about opening a church, I shared last night in Hudson about many of the plans in a man's heart, but the purposes of God prevail. I could see now that the purposes of God were bigger than anything I'd comprehended what church should be. In my mind, I was there to open a mega church. I was there to open a church that had 1,000 people in one location. But it was a little bit like a Walmart, like a little bit like a superstore, with the delusion that everyone was going to travel in to come and celebrate with us in this one mega church, mega center that we opened. And I was quite happy going with that until about 2 years ago, but more specifically this June when God changed my heart. I'm going to share a little bit on some of his stuff tonight. But we don't own a building, yet we do church in 6 places every Sunday morning. We don't just do an event. Because often when you talk about multi-site, what you're talking about is another Sunday event. God doesn't want events, he wants churches. Events turn up and they do something for one day. A church affects that community 7 days a week. So I didn't want multi-site, I didn't want guest appearances in places. I wanted to get into the communities. And so the journey for us started a while ago, but if I just kind of draw the south of England roughly, it's not going to be that good. We're kind of south of England. And if we put Portsmouth here, we had one location, and that was PFC, that was Portsmouth Family Church. As I said, that was my plan. Many of the plans in a man's heart, that was it. I'd done what I felt I needed to do as a church. Then, without really knowing it, a little while later, we opened another church in a place called Gosport, another congregation in a place called Gosport. But what we did is we retained the same heart, the same leadership. So the elders remained now in charge, not over one location, but over 2. But what we did was we built a leadership team in that congregation so that they were functional in their own right. they were able to do what they needed to do. They weren't always depending on us in a negative way. They had their own worship teams. They had their own leadership teams. They were able to make not just church on Sunday, but church 7 days a week happen in that area. And then a little bit later, and this was out even without even having a strategy. I'm thinking, man, if I did this without a strategy, imagine what I can do now. Because what I was doing, what I was sensing was we were hearing, and this is quite key because I know one of the places you guys are looking at is Socrates. What I was looking at, especially after Gosport with Haven, was we started to get people come to us. Now, the city of Portsmouth's kind of like that. And then these are the surrounding areas. This represents 210,000. This represents 400,000 people. And so we started getting people journey in from Haven. And these were the courageous. A church alive is worth a drive. These were the, you know, these were the people that were courageous enough to say, we know what we need. We know what we want to be a part of. But that was often a minority of 15 to 20 people. But when I began to sit and look at this, I thought, if I've got 15 or 20 people coming from that area that love how we do church, that means two things. One, there's a whole lot of non-courageous people that need us. But they haven't got the courage. To them, that journey of 10 miles is 100 miles. Because you've got to understand, this was a city and these were towns and villages. The mentality in a town and village is different to a city. City folk will travel where they need to go to get what they need to get. But a town person don't, they get almost held by the boundaries of a town. And so I started to think to myself, if we've got 15, 20, 25 people coming from Haven to us, one, that represents a whole lot of people that haven't got the gumption to do that, that don't think I'm going to go and get what I need. But it also means that there's not a church of our style or flavour in that location. If they're coming shopping to us, they like what we are. And as I began to investigate, it's exactly what I found. We had really good Baptist churches. We had really good Methodist churches. We had really good Anglican churches. But there wasn't a church carrying our DNA and our flavour, which was a license for me to begin to look at that area, because I don't want to go in and replicate something. There's enough places to go other than go and replicate something that's already there. And so when I saw the people coming, I said, we need to put a church in Haven. And I'll go back a little bit, because this church in Gosport, my experience I bring you today is I've taken over churches, I've repurposed churches, I've planted churches, and I've transplanted churches. I've done all of those things and learnt lessons from them all. And with this church in Gosport really was, there was an old Pentecostal type church there. The guy came to me and said, can we merge with you? I said, absolutely not. I wouldn't come in your church in a million years. But what we'll do is we'll kill it completely. And then we'll cause a new life because you're celebrating your past. I'm not. We can't, two can't walk together unless we're in agreement. And that was Jeff and the guys will tell you, Jeff's such a hero now. But we actually killed that church. I don't know if it's right to say that before God, but we killed it with the purpose of resurrecting something that carried everything we were. And the language of that, I said after the first, I said, you get one opportunity in the meeting to mention who you once were. I never want to hear that again. This is where your future starts. You are now family church. Your identity is family church. And, you know, by the time I killed that, we only had four couples come over, but what great couples they were. And we were able to launch something that wasn't hindered by its past. But with Haven, we turned up and there was zero there. There was nothing there. And we said, right, let's find a building. Let's build church there. One of the things that I'm speaking to now and you're answering me back in your mind is your memories of when you did it last time. It doesn't have to be like that. What I'm sharing today is you can turn up in a place and rent a building for 2 hours and not own it all week. Oh, I just saw some shoulder. Yeah, you can. You can rewrite the rules of planting and just use what you need for what you need to do. And so with Haven, what we did is we just found a leisure centre and we went in there and we did evening meetings and we began to generate a bit of momentum there. And we had two groups of people, and I've used this principle carrying through. I had a group of people that were committing that they lived in Haven And they wanted to affect the Havant area because that's where they lived. That's where their friends, their schools and their families were. They were coming to Portsmouth, but they didn't want to come to Portsmouth. They would rather have something in their own area. So I located them and I said, that's great. I'm going to plant this church with you. But we also had a group of people that were like, oh, no, no, in a few months when it's strong, we want to come back. So instantly, Portsmouth began to get the sound of Antioch. It wasn't a place where people were stored. It was a place that people came, grew, were equipped and sent out. And I didn't realize how close that was to what God was going to be in his purposes, not my plans, bringing me to what I'm doing today. And so we said we had two groups of people. One group, you're from that area. You know that there's people in that area. You know we've got to hit this area for Jesus Christ. So this is you changing your congregation, not your church, because we're one church with many congregations. And then we had another group that said, you know, we'll give it 6 months. We'll go. We'll fill the chairs. And when the locals come in, we'll slowly slip back to family church in a drip release. And there'll be an exchange of who's seated. And it was a great strategy. So we did that. And we've used that plan a couple of times. We started with an evening meeting once the life was going. Normally 7 months is all it took us. But that 7 months was important because we developed it. When you first turn up, you're an event. You're not a church. You're an event. That's what you are. But a little by little, over that 7 months, you change from being an event to being a church. You've witnessed all of these. Suddenly you're there and everybody's just being what they are in a different place. But then suddenly the locals start coming in and they start getting involved in the pastoral care. They start getting involved in teams. And you watch it. You stand back and you watch an event become a congregation. At that moment, you put it into the morning. Because to me, Western church time is still Sunday morning. You know, I've read many books by people. We need to have church at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, how's that working for you? Yeah, we went back to the mornings. Could have told you. Could have wasted. You wasted 10 years. I could have told you that was going to happen. Because it's still got a shelf life on it. Western church time. People go to church on Sunday morning. So why fight against that? So Sunday night is brilliant for birthing something, but you want to get it to the morning as quick as you can, unless there's no opportunity. So we opened Havant, and then we opened Water. Then we opened Waterside, which is about here. And this one started some different opportunities because it was farther away. Everything else was 15 minutes away. This was 45 minutes. And then we opened, at the same time we opened Waterside, we left the world of England and went and opened in Manila because we discovered that the same recipe that we had would work anywhere in the world. Because it was joined on heart connection. It wasn't on anything other than people working together with a common purpose, knowing who's who. No contending, no fighting. I said to Vaughan last night, if you could meet my leaders, they're incredible, but they're just normal people. And I said to Vaughan driving home last night, do you know that I've never once had a thought in my life, what's my wife doing at home right now? As an itinerant minister, I've never once thought, what's my wife doing? But equally, I've never once had a thought, what is my congregational pastors doing? Never once. I've never thought, are they trying to take over? Never. Because what we have is a heart vision with a common purpose. We believe in what we're doing. So at this point, we had a lot going on, but we still didn't really have the strategy that was now our philosophy. And then all of a sudden, it was about June time. And we had good leaders and good leadership teams in each of these. They were self-sufficient, but they didn't want to be. They were self-sufficient. They had their own worship teams. They had their own setup teams. Everything. We don't have any buildings yet. And so everything that we do is done in hired buildings. Teams turn up, set up church from 7 in the morning for 2 hours. We run church, a full church. Then everybody breaks down. That's how we've always done church. We've done it that way for 15 years. But at this point, I'm beginning to say, God, it would be kind of nice to have a building. Now, we've done this for 15 years. It'd be nice to kind of have a building. You know, now you've got to understand that Portsmouth is the second most densely populated city in Europe, which means we haven't got this land. I drive down these roads and I'm so jealous. The journey from here to Josh and Elaine's house, I'm like, it's just not fair. It's a bit of land there. It's a bit of land there. It's a bit of land there. You know, we get a bit of land when somebody pulls a building down. That's what we get. That's the only way you get a bit of land. But I started to talk to God. I said, okay, I'm blaming everyone for not giving me a building here. I'm blaming the council. It's their fault. I'm blaming these people. And then one day, it was about in June, I started to say, God, what if it's you? why would you block me from getting a building? And the scary thing was, I actually got an answer. And the answer was this. If I gave you a building a year ago, what you would have done was moved a large amount of stored people into a bigger room where they could become a larger amount of stored people. And God didn't want stored people. He wanted the church mobilized. Now, you've got to understand that the fashion of church over the last 10 years has been very high attractional. Our events, our performances, in some way have sent out a signal that it's okay just to come sit and watch. But I really believe the king is mobilizing his army. And so I started to look at this. I thought, you're right, God. If I moved the church now to a building, a larger building that it owned itself, you're right. Not all, but a high percentage of our people are just seated saints. And then God started to speak to my heart that the church must be missional, not attractional. Now, don't get me wrong, let's not throw all our paint away, our nice heaters and our nice lights, and go back to an unwelcoming, dry environment. Attractional is awesome, but it must have a high missional agenda. And that's what I believe that God was really journeying us in, that our attractional is good. We do great services. We put on great meetings, our lights, our smoke and all that. So it's great. But underneath what we are now, we have this missional agenda, but what we're saying now is, come, be equipped, be trained, we're sending you out. Come, be equipped, be trained, we're sending you out. And the whole heart of Family Church began to change as God began to really stir my heart. And I realized we'd been doing it already, but without even thinking. Imagine what we could do now if it was actually the plan. Without even thinking, we'd opened Gosport, that was successful, Havant was successful, Waterside, Manila was going well. Imagine what we could do. So instantly I began to say to the church, now we're going to change what we are. And I had to dedicate an amount of time to not just getting it from into my head, but into my leaders, which is what we're doing this morning, and then into the life of the church. So it was the very philosophy of the church. But Portsmouth became very much Antioch. And I said to the church things like, listen, if you just want to come and sit and watch, you're so welcome, but I'm really going to irritate you from this point. Because everything I'm going to be is about sending people out. Not just sending you out to plant churches, but sending you into the communities. Because we began to realize, even as we were doing church in our model, if we'd shut down, most of the community wouldn't have even known we were there. So missional agenda had to get into the very bedrock of who we were. The attractional church really, it does, attractional church, it affects the soul of a person and brings them through. But we've got to have something that affects the spirit of a person. And to me, I began to, and I got this book coming out in June called Return to the Blueprint, or, you know, God's Blueprint for his church. And in it was really recorded the journey. In June last year, I looked at a crowd of 1,000 people. And we were in the King's Theatre. I'd hired it. We were looking for a new venue, a new building, the container. And I looked at these people and I said, why am I not happy? Why am I not happy? And I began to look at them, because as we were beginning to move different venues, I heard sounds coming out like, oh, it's a bit hard. The parking's not the same. Parking's going to be, oh, I don't, oh, there's not enough room. And I thought, is that the sound of whining I hear? Is that the sound of settlers? And it really disturbed me. And I remember going to speak to my elder, Wayne, and you've got to meet Wayne to appreciate him, right? I said to Wayne, I said, we got a problem, mate. And this is all around this time in June. I said, we got a problem. He said, what's the problem? I said, it's not really the matter anymore of do they want to come to my church. The problem now is, do I want to lead them? And he said, you're going to crash your church, aren't you? I said, hopefully it won't go that way. But what I am going to do is I'm going to change the very DNA of who we are. But we will be missional to the heart of what we are. Everything about us will have the sound of, we're not stored people, we're a right bunch of goers. And I said to the church over and over again, because it's like when you have vision, it's like it has to seep through the rock like filtered water. You can't just stand up there persuaded as a leader. You've got to keep talking it, walking it until it's in the very fibre of who you are. I've got some points on that if we have time later on. So what we suddenly did is, okay, now the purpose of Family Church, according to the blueprint of Jesus, which is kind of important, right? Yeah. And in this book that I've written, I've said, you know what? We have put so many conservatories and extensions on that original blueprint. It's time to get rid of those and get back to what the essence of the Church of Jesus Christ was meant to be. Remember, the Church of Jesus Christ was planted in a natural place called Israel. Israel was not the blueprint for the church. Jesus laid out a spiritual blueprint for his church in a nation called Israel. But that blueprint wasn't referenceable by Israel alone. It was a blueprint, I believe, that could build effective church in every generation for every tribe and tongue until Jesus returned. And so as we roll out that blueprint, I'll share more on that tonight, I saw that the Great Commission was central to it all. And within that Great Commission is that we don't remain seated, but we go. The very culture of the Church of Jesus Christ is that we go. It's not about us sitting on our blessed assurance. It's not about us celebrating our success, but it's planning. Where do we go next? What people group do we affect? Yes. Now, we think like this very naturally when we think about the ends of the earth. Why do we think differently when it comes to Jerusalem? When we read the Great Commission, it says, go ye into all the ends of the earth. Okay, one of my thoughts was at that point when that was said, there wasn't anyone in the ends of the earth like local pastors that you could empower to be indigenously true to their Jerusalems. Things were a bit different. But when we speak about getting on a plane to the ends of the earth, suddenly we think, we've got to hit that village. We've got to go and take that village. There's a village there of unreached people. There's a people group there that are unreached. Hey, let me introduce you to some villages called Socrates. If we applied the same mentality to our Jerusalem as we do to the ends of the earth, do you know how effective the local church would be? But my thoughts are, because I've knocked the doors, I've walked the sandy streets. You've got to understand, please forgive me, I am a missionary to tarmac. The Western world turns me on. I love going to the Philippines and stuff like that, but I love America and England. I love the thought of causing a reformation, being an Oliver Cromwell in my generation, you know, to religion. So that's the thought that's coming through for me. I love the ends of the earth, but I love Jerusalem. I love, by that I'm not talking of Israel, I'm talking about this, Kingston, Socrates. Where are you from? Ellenville. I love thinking, there's villages there. Because when we go on a plane and go somewhere, we think, there's villages that need to hear about Jesus. Yeah, so there's Socrates. There's Ellenville. They're villages with people in them. The difference is the construction of their house. The problems and the needs, especially in modern day society, are the same behind those doors as many of them in Africa. You know, there's people starving in America and England. They got no food. And we've got governments that don't know what to do. This is the time for the church to arise. Not just with our preaching, but with our humanitarian care that we go in and we send out. Jesus cares about your family. Jesus cares that you haven't got enough food to give your kids today. Jesus, and that gives us the license to share what's the greatest treasure of all. So what I started to see was the same plan for the ends of the earth was a great plan for the Jerusalem as well. And I started to look at Antioch Church. And I said, that's what I'm going to make Portsmouth now. Remember, let me go back. Portsmouth was my sole vision. One church in Portsmouth. That was it. That was it. That's all I wanted to do. I would have died happy. That was it. But all of a sudden, I started seeing, no, imagine if we started not just applying this in our nation, but in our city. So what we did straight away is I said, right, okay, let's act off of this. We are going to now, within our city, hit another part of our city. Because I started to look at some of the chains like Walmart and that. And in our country, we've got a chain of grocery stores called Morrison's. And I realized that Morrison's had more sense than me. Morrison's never had one hypermarket in the center of the city. Because they knew that that wouldn't make the supermarket accessible to all the neighborhoods. So what they did is they opened stores around that city that made church or what they were doing accessible to those local communities. And as they did that, what people did is, because a lot of people don't drive. Now we think of a perspective of being a driver. But what about the one parent families? What about the other families that don't own a car, cannot get a lift? What we endeavor to do now is drop not a church, but another part of who we are with the same DNA and the heartbeat. So what we did is I said, right, I want 100, 120 people. And I started to look, because what I was going to do now was I wasn't going to go outside of a city. I was going to plant in the city and only 5 miles away, because that 5 miles was as good as 100 miles to the people living in that community. It was too far. They wouldn't come to church in the city. They wouldn't come to church in the city. Some of them couldn't come to church in the city, but they could walk down the road to their neighborhood and access church that was identical to what we were doing. So I said to the church, all right, everybody bored of sitting, we've done sitting, everybody happy with the lights, the smoke machines, we all like that, yeah, a lot of fun, and it was all good. Everybody happy, yeah. Right, let's change the world. Yeah. I need 100 or so of you to sacrifice all your relationships that you love. I want 100 or so people to sacrifice sitting next to the people they love sitting next to, to sacrifice being in a meeting that's full and it's got everything that's enjoyable for a Sunday. I said, I'm not looking for everyone. I'm looking for 100 people who will realize that the benefit of sacrificing that is taking the message to a people group. To a people group who have not yet heard. Come on, it's the same thing as we do in Africa. We must get to that village. Well, why must you not get to Socrates? Why must you not get to Ellenville? There's still people there who have not heard. And if they have heard, they've heard religion. They've not heard about the message of grace. They've not heard about the goodness of God that causes a repentance and new life. And so to me, I'm applying the same ethos or philosophy to all three spheres. And so I said, I want 100 people. But I also knew I didn't want idiots. I mean, I could have said, you know what, I've got about 100 people here that I'd love to get rid of. They'd stop annoying me. I wouldn't have to look at them on Sunday anymore. Let's just send them over there and they'll be out of my face. But the trouble was, every seed bears fruit after its own kind. And I realised I would have grown a whole harvest of idiots. And I would have had like, idiot. And God would have said, you sowed for it, brother. You know. So I thought, if I'm going to cause a harvest, I've got to send the same DNA. I've got to send the same seed. And so what I did is I took pretty much all the best people from all our key departments. Now, I had a strategy, because when you begin to think beyond yourself and you begin to think about mobilizing and sending, you've also got to attach to that equipping. And you're an equipping church, so this isn't a problem. But the funny thing is that sometimes we equip, and we jam. Why? Because the roles are all filled. Yeah. We jam ourselves. Yeah. We get constipated. Yes. We get constipated. Yeah. And we need an enema. And an enema is we start sending, we start releasing some people. Because what we were doing is we were sending out the signal from our stage, you've got to be equipped, you've got to be involved, but every position was filled by great people. So what we did is we took all those great people who had a heart to live for the benefit of others, and we sent them 100 of them, only about 8-10 weeks ago, over to the north of the city. And what suddenly happened is we created this wonderful void. But, you know, we're scared of void. God's not. God loves void. In the beginning, void. And God just looks for void and he fills it. But we don't like void because it rocks our insecurity. But sometimes we got to create void. We got to say, you know, let's send that leader over there. Let's send this leader over there. But that means we haven't got a leader. Yes, you have. They've just got to come through. They've just got to come through. If you've got nothing for people to grow into, what's the point of them continuing to grow? And so this model is great because it affects communities that can't be affected unless we go. Two, it gives the church a place to have a draw, like Antioch, of people being trained, put into position, released. Trained, put into position, and released. It becomes a releasing culture. So we sent them over to the north and we created void in Portsmouth. And guess what? Straight away it started to fill up. Now, we did a couple of other things because we were running two services. And I want to tell you, if you've got another plan other than two services, go for it. Because don't think that two services is an easier route than planting another church. It's really not. It takes long-term sustaining by teams to keep that happening. And it has its own bunch of challenges. To me, planting another church is a lot easier. Another congregation is a lot easier in challenges than putting church on twice on Sunday. And it's just how we do it, because we have to break the model. Sometimes we think about opening another congregation. We got to buy a building. No, you haven't. Well, we've got to rent a building all week. Why? What are you going to be doing Monday to Tuesday that you can't do in your home? What you need is a building for 2 hours, well, 4 hours with set up and breakdown, a rented building that could cost you well under 1,000 for a month to rent a facility there. Remember, that's not your final home. You need a building that you grow through and then you create the buzz that, hey, we've outgrown, we're going to another building. All those things are good. Yep. They're good for the momentum of church. And so you go in there, and it's actually quite low cost when you own mobile equipment. It's quite low cost. So what we did is we'd taken over, we'd repurposed, we planted. This one was different. This one was more fun, and I think this one's relative to what you guys are thinking. Because you can't really call it a plant, because a plant involves a seed. A transplant is when you take a living, active part of who you are, and you just put it in another area, and it lives instantly. Do you know how quick you can establish churches in Ellenville and in Socrates when you don't think plant, but you think transplant? But the main house remains true to training leaders who are good to go, who don't want to be stored people. They want to affect this area for Jesus Christ, just as you guys are affecting India and beyond. Same model. And what you do is you come to a point, it's like me now, Portsmouth Central, which was once upon a time my final plan, is now Antioch. It's a training ground. It's a sending place. I'm good at drawing people and getting them saved. I'm good at an evangelist. And so what I use is I use that gift to keep filling chairs. But the agenda is now, you know, I spent 14 years trying to fill church. I'm going to spend the rest of my life emptying it. Not with offensive preaching that makes people go to other churches. But by sending people out. Sending people out. You know, all from the stage, we're like, because in 2 weeks we open number 7. And what we've done here is, because I realised we'd planted, there's many differences. I kind of learnt this stuff en route, between planting in a city, a town and a village. They're three different monsters. They really are. The village mentality to the city mentality are different. But we realised without even knowing it, we'd planted in the city, the town and a village and internationally. I said, where can I plant next? And God said to me, subculturally. So in 2 weeks, we're opening a student church in the university. Because we've got 20,000 international students in our university that leave their somewhat Christian homes and are exposed to so many societies that are so close to hell with homosexuality and all these things. These kids are thrust into this compound university. Lils has been there. It's bizarre. And the church is kind of told, oh, you can pick them up from the boundary on Sunday morning and drop them off. I said, no way, I'm coming into the belly of hell and I'm going to preach Jesus Christ in the belly of it. And they said, you can't do it. The chaplaincy won't like it. We'll get stuffed. I'll open a society then. And so I'm opening a society called Great Big Life, which gives me the same rights, that gives me the same rights as the gay and lesbians. So when I'm preaching Jesus, you can't shut me down because this is church, because I'm not a church. I'm a fraternal. And my members pay to be in it. And we have as many rights as the gay and lesbians in this place. How dare you try and shut us down? You're violating our rights. So again, we thought outside the box. We haven't let us in the university yet, but the venue we've got is right on the edge. And then when I got the fraternity open, stage 2, we'll go into hell and start to preach the alternative, which is Christ. In that. And so I thought, this is so exciting, because sometimes you plant subculturally, and if you've got universities and stuff like that, and you say, so that'll be an identical service. No, we've modeled it. The heart's the same. In that university, I'm sending Mark and Sarah, who's Lil's, is he uncle Mark, isn't he? I'm sending them in as philosophers. Now, we've got to understand, students think they know everything. They know nothing. They know nothing. They just think they know everything, you know. But we're going to go in, and we're going to go in. So there'll be loud praise and worship, because that's what students like. But then what we're going to do is we're going to take things like Darwinism and evolution and those things full on in a philosophy type debate and preach Christ that way. And so, but if you cut it, the same DNA comes out, family church. Yeah. Even though it's a congregation in a subculture, even though it's a congregation in a village, even though it's a congregation in another part of a nation. My pastor's just landed in from Manila today in England to be at conference. When they're at conference, they won't feel the odd ones out, because it's the same heartbeat. Now, I'm going to get onto the structure of our leadership in a moment. I just wanted to paint a pattern because many of you don't know what I do. You see me turn up here, I preach, and then I go home. But this is what I'm busy doing, it's planting. And so now my next plan is before the end of the year, hopefully, I'm going to plant again in the south. So I'll have Portsmouth Central, Portsmouth North, Portsmouth South, and the University Church. You say, well, that's a lot of churches for that area. No, not for 210,000 people, it's not. And those 210,000 people, when you begin to crush things, each of those communities I'm planting in is equivalent to a town in its own right. The people within the boundaries of that city will not travel to a central place out of their community. Now, our stubbornness is, well, they should. They need the Lord and they come to us. No, no, that's not missional. Yeah, that's not what the early church did. Amen. The early church were ascending people that sent people. You know, Paul was such a chameleon evangelist. I loved him. His content never changed. But he'd dress up for anyone to be anything to get Christ, the content, into them. And the whole early church was missional. The success of the early church was it was missional. They were a bunch of goers, not a bunch of stayers. They weren't trying to bring people to them. They were taking Christ to the people. Now, this is working for us. And what we've got now is a model, and a lot of it's down to the leadership, which I'll share in a moment, of how that's structured. At this point, there's nothing stopping me opening a church every other month. If I can keep raising leaders, if I can keep filling the void, equipping the void, and releasing the void, there's nothing stopping me opening a church and moving across the face of the UK. At the same time, I opened a movement of churches. And in the north now, we've got churches that represent us in the different. They're not family church because their style is different to who we are. Their heart varies slightly, so we can't contaminate what we are in that. But I opened a movement of churches so that they are us, but, you know, in an autonomous state. So we've got a plan, and it's kind of unstoppable now. Now, any questions on that before I move on about just some of how the leadership sustains that? Does that all make sense? Okay. Now, what we did is wherever there's growth, your structure must sustain it. The church is an organism. And structure must always sustain what God's doing next. If anything changes consistently in family church, it's our structure. Because our structure must serve what God is doing. Now, what we've seen as we journey, remember, I wasn't reading any books. We were making this up as we went along. We were just a bunch of mates who was like, should we change England? Yeah, let's do it. Who are we going to send? Oh, we'll send him. We were a bunch of mates. But when I look at the disciples, I see a bunch of mates. And they were apostles, prophets, but they were a bunch of mates that had a common agenda. And that common agenda stopped them fighting with who was in charge. It was more of an issue of, please let me be involved. And that's what we're finding in family church. People aren't fighting to be in charge. They're fighting to be involved. Because the buzz it creates, like at the end of our conference next week in Power, because it was funny, I spoke out the vision just a couple of years ago. I want to plant a church, minimum, one a year. And this year, I was like, what are we doing? I just got the student church ready. So at the end of Empower, what we do is we have this cinema-type movie that plays. And it's dum 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 dum. And it comes up in 1990, Portsmouth. And then it comes up, dun 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 dun. In 19 whatever, came Gosport. Dun, 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 dun. And then the music's like being in the theatre. Then came Waterside. Then came this. Then came Portsmouth Knife. Then came Manila. And then it comes up, and now. And the whole church goes, rah! It's like a barbaric yawp. Rah! And now, this one. And that tells me it's in the culture of the church. Yeah. They live for these moments. But that also means it's a whole bunch of people on the move. But they're moving, some of them, because that's where they're going to now do church from now on. Others, we got this rent a mob that just go wherever we send them. And they turn up, we love you, Jesus. And then they come back. And they're brilliant. They're just like a rent a mob, you know. So we got an instant, because transplant is so much easier than plant. I've been there. I turned up in Portsmouth with 12 people and a cat and preached, believing God for 1,000. I've done that. I've not cheated. But I tell you, transplant, when you've got a common dream, when you know who does what, who's in charge, and there's no contention, there's just a servant heart. Come on, let's change this area beyond Kingston. You really can. But what you do is you just transplant. You take a measure of who you are. And if you are an equipping church and you ask the question, who wants to go, you will have a good response. Because some people know, look, there's nothing for me to do here. Others are waiting for you to go so they can have your job. If you're insecure, you've missed the point. You got it, because what this put into our culture was the need to reproduce. So all of our guys had to start reproducing themselves, because every chance was, I'm going to send them off somewhere. And which meant when they left, they had to make sure that their department could function without them, which was contrary to the attractional seeker-friendly type mode, where you made yourself indispensable. What would they do without me? That's fundamentally flawed. Yeah. That's got no missional to it at all. It's self-absorbed. All of my team leaders now know that they may be here next year. But there's no guarantees. Because if I need them over there, if I go for Southampton, if I go for Guildford, if I go for Bournemouth, then I'm going to take again the best of who we are and drop them over there. Now, a number of things that you know, one of your questions is, well, how do you tie it all together and keep the same heart? People often say to me, so you must be so busy preaching in all these congregations. No. I've preached gospel at 7 years old. I've been there 3 times. Haven't once. When it opened, I made a token visit just to bless them. Waterside, I've never preached in. Because I'm not building it on me. Because what if me isn't here anymore? What if God moves me to another country? Is everything I've spent the currency of my days building going to collapse in my absence? So to me, the reason I never went multi-site and multi-congregation is because congregation speaks of each individual component having its own strong leadership that's submitted to a bigger vision. Like I said, I promise you, I have never once, just like I've never once thought, I wonder what my wife's doing now that I'm not there. I've never once thought of Jeff, Stuart, Paul, Steve, Rick, or any of the other guys. I've never once thought, I wonder if they're splitting the church. The thought hasn't never even gone through. Because from us, we sent out. Us is so important. From us represents common vision, common purpose. We're changing this area together. From us, we sent out. And so when we originally had just one church, it was quite simple. We just needed some elders and some deacons, and that just oversaw what was going in the one location. But suddenly when we started to get other congregations, what we needed to do was look at the structure. And one of my keys of advice would be, make your structure so flexible. Because suddenly God does something in that direction. And our structure must be flexible enough to say, yep, we can handle that. Because who are we not to handle the organism of church? You know, for too many attractional churches in our nations, it's become too organized. It's become too organizational. And their organizations become the coffin that stops them growing. With us, we just say, if it's God, we're going to do it, and we'll build the scaffolding around what he's doing now. And that's how our leadership's developed. So all of a sudden, I mean, once upon a time we had Portsmouth, and Portsmouth had a number of departments to it that were important. You had obviously discipleship, you had praise and worship, you had kids work, you had youth. You had a number of things, events, and that made that congregation happen. And that was pretty easy when we were one. But then suddenly when Portsmouth began to plant out, and we had, like we got now, we got Gosport, we got Havant, we got Waterside, we got Manila, we got Portsmouth North, we got the student church. You know, we got a number of churches there. If I put Gosport there, Havant, Waterside, the North, I forget where else we are, students. But you get the idea. What we actually had now was we couldn't control all these things centrally. But what we had to do was establish if there were going to be functioning congregations that were making a difference all week. I'm not talking about events today. Anyone could put on an event. Anyone could put on a gig. I'm talking about planting, fully functioning, people caring, changing communities that affect their community. Then each of these now needed what that one had. Which you say, well, that means you're losing control. No, because we have a common heart and a common vision. Everybody knows who's who. So each of them have got an events manager now. Each of them have got a youth department. Each of them have got a children's department. Each of them have got discipleship. But how do we control all that now from one central place? Again, what we had to do was develop what we were, because we used to have elders, a core team, and a general leadership. And so God would speak to us here, and then we'd bring it through our core team, and then we'd bring it through our general team into the life of a church. Now, that worked when we were one church, but that wasn't going to work now. We had to get vision in a lot of places and make sure everybody had what they need. So what we did is we took that core team and we made 12 key departments out of those core teams, and we put what were our core teams into every congregation. So now every congregation wasn't depending on us for every thought, decision, and choice. Because what we realized was a lot of them, even though there was common heart, had different opportunities. Gosport suddenly had incredible opportunities with immigration prisons. We never got that in Portsmouth. We know nothing about that. But they need to be empowered to reach the things in their communities. The things that are available for you to do in Socrates and Ellenville will be different to things in Kingston. But we've got to have a can-do mentality. So what we did is we linked these main, like, events. So I'm going to use that one as an analogy: discipleship, youth, worship. And we made 12 key departments, which are now our primary leaders. And that's where I spend most of my time with now, is my primary leaders. My input is to these primary leaders. Because what they do, each of them, is they correspond. Now, I know that you guys are looking at your first one, and then very soon your two. I'm just telling you where we are now so you can see that this model continues. It sets you up to keep on going. So my events manager is called Smudge, which is a nickname. If you name Smith in England, you're a smudger. And so his proper name is Mark Smith, but we know him as Smudge. And Smudge is my primary leader, which used to be my core leader, my primary leader now over all of the churches, but in each of the churches, there's a corresponding department. So when, say, events in Havant, say, our lighting's not right, this venue we've taken on, the lighting's just not working, we need to, they don't come and knock my door, they don't knock the door of my executive pastor, Stuart. What they do is they correspond with him. Now, he's not there to do it for them every Sunday. He's there as a resource. He's there to empower. He's there to communicate their needs, because this isn't here anymore. He's there to communicate a conversation between everything that's going on in the church to me and Stuart. And equally, when we say, you can dream on, you want lights that you don't need, you cheeky monkeys, you ain't getting them for about a year. We say that now to Smudge, and he communicates that back to them, which makes us a nice guy and everybody hates him. Which is a good leadership principle. I'm not the bad guy. I'm one step away from being the bad guy. It's always somebody else that's delivering the death blow, not me. Which makes me likable and everybody claps when I get up to speak. So what we didn't change was this top level here. Now, I'm talking about 6 or 7 churches because I believe that this could be a defining moment for you. When you step into Socrates with a heart to do it because you have a revelation of what you're doing, and you see the success of that, you see people coming in that never would have come to Kingston. You see communities being affected by a local presence of who you are. That's not a guest appearance event, but are people saying, we are the church. We are here to find out what's going on behind your doors, to be spiritual and practical help to you. When you turn out and you see the buzz of those people coming through the doors. All of my churches are planted in rough areas. I don't know what's about. The last one, Portsmouth North. I begged God, please give me a rich area. Please give me one rich area. One, just one. Give me some wealthy people. Every building for the wealthy areas was shut. And I ended up in King Richard School, slap bang in the belly of the roughest part of that. But it's kind of, I reckon that's God has an anointing on me to do that. I don't know. But you know what? That's where you find the need. That's where you find the brokenness. That's where you find people that are wondering how they go. Do you know, I often now find in Portsmouth, we started all these big food banks now. We found mums regularly that do not have food for their children. And so often we visualise that's Africa or India. It's really not. You'll be amazed, well, you guys know, you'll be amazed at what's behind some of the doors in the communities of Kingston. To me, we should apply the same passion to the ends of the earth as we do to Jerusalem, the same passion to Jerusalem as we do to the ends of the earth. There's three spheres to that calling. And, you know, for me, as I said, I apologise. I'm turned on by tarmac. I love Jerusalem. I love going out. I go to the ends of the earth with a passion. We send people there. But to me, it's transforming communities in the Western world and reforming the church to being a going people.